Right, Boker Tov, Shavua Tov, everybody. Hope all is well. And part 13, I believe, of our series from King Cyrus to Lord Balfour. And today's topic is Seder Olam. Vakasha, Rabbi Litzag.
So I'll begin with an apology. Rabbi Jay's been asking me for the last 2 weeks to give him a list of the topics. And I'm trying to plan out from now to Purim. I need like three classes on the Megillah itself, which is on the schedule. But we have like a month. I thought when the ritual sketch, I thought it'd be a small break, but we decided to continue. So to understand what we're going to do with the Megillah, I wanted to go through Seder Olam properly. And so what we'll do today we'll have a class on Seder Olam itself, because we're going to refer to it a lot. And in order to understand why Seder Olam reaches the conclusion that it does, we started that topic last week, and how it explains the Megillah, what I want to dedicate today's share to is to understand how Seder Olam works, where it's coming from, who wrote it, and what its approach is. Now, the accepted opinion among both, especially in Chazal, and even in most of academia, first of all, Seder Olam is a work of Tanaim, and it's attributed to Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta. You've heard of Rabbi Yossi, he's pretty famous. Like Stam Rabbi Yossi is Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta. When was he living? So we know the temple was destroyed in about 70 AD. I mean, not AD, it's CE. Gotta be careful from last week. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, he was a great rabbi, of course, one of the big Tanaim, at the time of the Beit HaMikdash being destroyed, and he moved to Yavne. One of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's Tamidim was Rabbi Akiva, and the Bar Kokhba revolt. In the time of Rabbi Akiva, that's the next generation of Tanaim. One of Rabbi Akiva's Tamidim was Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta. So we're talking about 100 and something, like the second century CE. That's Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta, and that's the time when the Mishnah is sort of forming. A Talmid of Rus and Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta was living in the Galilee, in the city of Tzipori, the same place where Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi lived, the author who he attributed the Mishnah to. So Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi pretty much is the end of the Tanaim, and he starts the Mishnah, etc., or codifies the Mishnah. So Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta, who's writing Seder Olam, is right before the closing of the Mishnah, which means Seder Olam is an early work of Tanaim. When it reaches its final form that we have today, that's a big argument. Is it later? Some people don't put its final form till we'll call the small Masechtot, like early Gaonim times and things like that. But that's for academians. But the main source of writing is from the time of Tanaim. And most likely it wasn't that Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta is writing it from scratch. My assumption was that Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta is taking a lot of attempts to work out the chronology, which makes sense, people working on chronology from earlier times, and starting to codify and putting it together, just like Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi does with all the Mishnah the generation later. So now, what I want to do, I want to take a little glimpse into how Seder Olam begins, just to get a feel of how he works. We're going to focus on the end of the book, because he goes from Adam HaRishon, from the beginning of Chumash, to the end of Tanakh. And he ends when Tanakh is over. We're going to be talking about the last couple chapters, where he talks about the beginning of the Second Temple, and the Second Temple period, which is our topic. But to understand his approach, I want to give you a taste of his approach from the early years. Now, a couple of principles, which we'll see for sure. If something is a verse, you don't argue with a verse. If Chumash says Adam was 930, lived 930 years, he lived 930 years. And if it says King Shaul was king for 2 years, he was king for 2 years. And he doesn't believe in typology and things like that. Then we say he doesn't believe in it, but he doesn't use that and doesn't say, oh, it's an approximate. So whenever there's a pasuk, he's going to follow it. So I'm going to share my screen, and Seder Olam is available online without a problem, but I'm going to open up Seder Olam. It's just Perek Aleph. I'll translate the Hebrew. It's real simple. It says, from Adam until the flood. Adam HaRishon is 1,000 due to the Gematria in 656 years, 1656. And what's the thing? He simply goes to chapter 5 in Sefer Bereshit and counts up all the years, which is real easy to do. And then he has to play a little bit with the years of Noach, because remember, the flood is dated to the life of Noach. We have to make assumptions about when Noach had his children. what was the order of his children, because the question is shame the oldest without going to the details. But basically, we have from Adam to Noach based on chapter 5 in Bereshit and the story of the flood. Then he says from the flood until Migdal Bavel, to the Dor HaFlagah, is 340 years. And from there, he proves that Noach was alive during Migdal Bavel and 10 years afterwards. Now, here comes this big statement. Avinu Avraham, I guess it should be Avraham Avinu, Hayah Baplaga ben Memchat Shana. You might remember an argument among the rabbis. How old was Avraham Avinu when he found God? Some people say he was 3, some people say he was 40, some people say he was 48. The primary opinion in Chazal, this is in Seder Olam, Avram was 48 when he found God. Where's that coming from? The opinion that he was 3, that means as soon as like it came natural to him. The opinion he was 40, that's the Rambam's opinion, in Maimonides, that's because at 40, that's when your wisdom reaches the highest level, and through deductive reasoning, Avram was able to figure out God almost like Aristotle. That's why the Rambam follows 40. But the Midrash says 48, because the Midrash does a calculation that Migdal Bavel, the scattering of the builders of Migdal Bavel, happened when Avram was 48, because there's a pasuk that says when Eber named his son Peleg, he called him Peleg because during the life of Peleg, because during the life of Peleg, that's when things scattered. And therefore Eber, that's Amar Rabbi Yossi, which is Seder Olam, Navi Gadol Haya Ever. Ever, not Ever, Shem's great grandson. That's why Avram is called, the descendants of Ever are called Ivrim in Tanakh. So Ever was a great Navi because when Peleg was born, he knew that at the end of the year that he would die would be the year of Migdal Bavel. But again, he's going on the Pasuk Kimi Abnaf Gaharetz. Now, that's not the simple Pshat of the Pesukim, but it's definitely the Midrashic interpretation because the pasuk is coming to teach you something. You know, why does the Torah tell us Kibi Amavni Flagaharetz? To tell you it was during his lifetime. And he says it can't be in the beginning. He says, Im bitchilat yamav. If it was the beginning of his life, it can't be because Yachtan was smaller. Okay. And he had 13 families and they were part of the dispersion. Okay. I maybe was in the middle of his life. Listen to this principle. Ba'lo, lo ba listom ela lefaresh. This is one of the biggest principles Seder Olam has. When something is unclear, I'm going to use a pasuk to prove something. Meaning, when something is unclear in the Torah, I find another pasuk to make it clear. And therefore, the Torah isn't coming to confuse us, it's coming to explain things to us. And therefore, whenever there's a question mark, we don't have question marks, and we say there's got to be somewhere in the Torah that we can solve it from. Okay? Because he can't say it's the beginning. He can't say it's in the middle. Therefore, it's got to be the end of his life because Chumash has to be clear with the years. So that's how they get to Avram was 48. Now, here comes the big one. This has to do with Sefer Shemot. Avram Avinu haya b'shash nidberi ma'akadosh baruch hu v'ben haptarim ben 70 shana. I'm going to stop my screen share for a minute and we'll have a little bit of fun. Listen what Seder Olam says. And I want you to appreciate his approach to Midrash. From what you remember, someone can share and tell me, how old was Avram when he made Aliyah? In the beginning of Parshat Lech Lecha.
75.
How do you know he was 75?
It says so, for Avram.
It says so, Avram ben 75 shana, b'tzeitah miharan. It's the first Aliyah in Lech Lecha. If it wasn't the first Aliyah, less people would know it. But it's in the first Aliyah. Every Bakari knows it, and sure we know it. And if Avram made Aliyah when he was 75, Avram says that God spoke to Avram and beat Ben Abtarim when he was 70. How could that be? Avram didn't make Aliyah until he was 75. And beat Ben Abtarim is in chapter 15 in Sefer Bereshit. So Seder Olam claims that chapter 15 in Bereshit precedes chapter 12. Avram was already in Israel beforehand. And God spoke to him in Brit Ben Tarim when he was 70, and Avram made Aliyah 5 years later. What's the source? Now I want to show you how Seder Olam works. Let's go to Parshat Bo, and let's have some matzah. Not matzah, let's have some fun. Wrong source here. You don't see my email. Okay. In chapter 12 in Sefer Shmot. Wait, did I share my screen? I did not share my screen. My mistake. Okay. Chapter 12 in Sefer Shmot. Perek Yudbet. In Pasek Lamed Zayin, we leave Egypt. In verse 37, we go from Ramses to Sukkot. Erev follows, and we bake matzah for breakfast because we were thrown out of Egypt and we couldn't linger. Now listen carefully. Umosha b'nei Yisrael asher yashvu b'mitzrayim 30 shana v'400 shana. How long was the settlement of the people of Israel, the children of Israel, in Egypt? 30 and 400 years. Vayhi. And it came to pass. Miketz 30 shana. These are very bold verses. These are like, you know, the grand conclusion. And it came after 30 years and 400 years. Vayhi be'etzem hayom hazeh, on this very day, yatzu kol tzivot Hashem me'eretz Mitzrayim, all of God's hosts left Egypt. Now, the simple understanding of this text is from the time Yaakov and his sons, but we read in Parshat Vayechi, or Parshat Vayigash already, in the end of Sefer Bereshit, the 70 nefesh should go down to Egypt, that the Torah, when it's exactly where Sefer Shmot begins. From the time when Yaakov and family come down to Egypt and settle, Yosef tells him, Yeshvu na Be'eretz Goshen, come and settle in the land of Goshen. The simple understanding is that Am Yisrael is in Egypt for 430 years from the time of Yaakov coming down to Egypt, when Yaakov was 130. Because when Yaakov goes to Pharaoh, he's 130, and Yosef is 39. That's the simplest reading. Chazal don't accept that. Why don't they accept it? Well, there's a problem. What's the problem? If I go to chapter 6, if I go back to chapter 6 in Sefer Bereshit, Sefer Shmot, that's this week's Parsha. After the beginning of Parsha Ve'era, and the people don't listen to Moshe, and God tells Moshe to go again, and Moshe is reluctant, we have a bit of a break in the action, starting in... After Pasuk Gimel, God tells Moshe and Aaron, commands him to go to Pharaoh again. Before Moshe and Aaron go to Pharaoh and start the plagues, we have a little break, an interlude, starting from verse 14 in chapter 6. We find the genealogies of the tribe of Levi. It's Elu, Roshe, Beit Avotam. And then it's interesting, there's always groups of three in this unit. There's something special about three at a time, because we have Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and then stop. So we have Reuven, Bnei Shimon, and then Bnei Levi. We don't continue the rest of the tribes. We go Reuven, Shimon, Levi, three tribes. Levi has three sons, Gershon, Kat, and Merari. But we follow the years of three descendants from Levi. What are they? Ushnei Chaye Levi. Levi lives 137. Kat, his son, lives how many years? Ushnei Chaye Kat, 133 years. Then we have Merari. And then we talk about Amram, who's one of Kat's son is Amram. B'nei Kat Amram Yisar. Then we follow Amram, and he lived for how many years? Ushnei Chaye Amram, Shevo Shoshim Amat Shana, 137. So, and then we have Moshe Rabbeinu. So if we look at the generations from Levi, Levi 137, Kahat 133, Amram 137, and then Moshe is 80 when we leave Egypt, there aren't enough years to get to 430. Why? Because Levi was already born when we came down to Egypt. In fact, you can do a calculation. Levi was about 45 when he came down to Egypt. But assuming that the children are born before the father dies, if Levi gives birth to Kahat before he died, which obviously probably gave birth already when he came down to Egypt already, and if Kahat gave birth to Amram before he died, and if Kahat gave birth to Moshe, if Amram before he died, then there's no way I can get to 430 years if I do a calculation of all the generations from Levi, Kahat, Amram, Moshe. You can do the math later on your own. But basically, because of these psukim, I can't calculate, the 430 doesn't work. In other words, the Torah says it's 430 from the time we're settling in Egypt, but 430 can't work out from the time that Yaakov is 130. You can do the math, it doesn't work. Rashi does the calculation for you there as well. Now, because I can't go from that date, I have to find an earlier date. So what can I date to? Because of that, we'll see in a minute, what does Seder Olam do? Seder Olam now is going to go to Brit Ben Abtarim. I'm sure you remember chapter 15 in Sefer Bereshit. And in Brit Ben Abtarim, what are we told? What does God tell Avram? V'yemar l'Avram yodo teda, ki geri yezarcha beres lo lahem, v'avadum v'inu otam, 400 shana. So what do we know? That Avram's offspring, ki geri yezarcha, your offspring will be strangers in someone else's land for 400 years. From here, Chazal deduced that it has to be at least 400 years from the birth of Yitzchak until we leave Egypt. What's that Rambam going to say? Because the psukim come to clarify things, not to confuse things, I have to follow the minimum. Therefore, from the birth of Yitzchak until we leave Egypt is 400 years. And when the verse says it's 30 years and 400 years, it's 400 years from the birth of Yitzchak and 30 years from the time, from before then, from the time that God spoke to Avram and Brit Ben Abtarim. So because of this pasuk saying 400 years, and when we leave Egypt, we say it's 30 and 400 years. So Chazal say I have to go back 30 years, and Avram was 70 in chapter 15. That was Chazal say that this whole story of Avram and Brit Ben Abtarim happened when Avram was 70. Hope you followed the logic. Let me just go back to, let's look at Seder Olam now. Not this one, but this one. Now we'll follow. Avram Avinu haya b'shashen b'erimo HaKadosh Baruch Hu ben Abtarim ben 70 shana. Got it? What's his proof? Shenemar, v'hi miket 30 shana v'arbamot shana, but we just read in Shmuel chapter 12. How is that a proof? Why? And after God spoke to him, he went to Haran. He went back to Haran. It was after Brit Ben Abtarim, he went back to Haran. Because it says in Perek Yud Bet, Avram was 75 when he betzeto mecharan. So you see how Seder Olam works backwards? It's because he has to take the years literally and has to do a calculation, keep a minimum. He says Brit Ben Abtarim happened when Avram was 70, and he must have gone back to Haran for 5 years. And he left Haran again in chapter 12, and Chumash is out of order. Now, then he does a cheshbon, how many years from Torah Flaga? Now, then he says the same year that Avram came from Haran and came to Israel was the same year as the famine. He came to Israel for a couple of months and went right down to Egypt. That's chapter 12 in Sefer Bereshit. And that's when then he does the calculation of the war of the four kings and five kings. Anyway, that's a little taste of Seder Olam. Now, then he does a cheshbon of when Yitzchak was born and when Yitzchak married Rivka and how old Rivka was. Basically, Seder Olam wants to calculate all the years that of every event in the Bible. Then he does a nice calculation about Yeshivat Shem Ve'ever, that Yaakov was living, had 15 years to live with Avram Avinu. And he had shame for 50 years. Basically, talks about how we get to Yeshivat Shem Ve'ever. Then he talks about which people's lives overlapped. Adam Arishon saw Metushelach, and Metushelach saw Shame, and Shame saw Yaakov, and Yaakov saw Amram, and Amram saw Chia Shiloni, and then Elio saw Elio Shiloni, and Elio is still alive. It's these seven people, trace. That's how he traces human history from the beginning of Adam Arishon. Now we get to our topic, what we said before. God told Avram Avinu, Brit Ben Abtarim, Yodot Deda Ki Geri Yitzchak 400 Shana, okay? And what's his Zera? Is Yitzchak. Shemar Ki Yitzchak Yikra Yelech HaZara. Then we talk about how old Yitzchak was and Yaakov was. And then if that's the case, if Yaakov is 130 when he stands in front of Paro, and it's 400, Yitzchak was 60 years old when Yaakov was born. So from the birth of Yitzchak until Yaakov goes down to Egypt is 60 and 130, that's 190. And that's why we have 210 years left in Egypt, and that's called Redushama. I'm sure you've heard of the 210 years we're in Egypt. So from the time Yaakov and family come down to Egypt, it's 210 years. So Nimsei Tomer, Kshirdu Yisrael Mitzrayim, then he has the whole thing about Eov. Overlapped the whole time in Egypt, but that's a whole different drasha. Okay, then we get to the Exodus. Okay, and then everything he says, the whole thing is 400 years from the birth of Yitzchak. Okay, so that was my little, that's our little taste of Seder Olam. That was my introduction. I just wanted to give you a taste of Seder Olam, the style of the Midrash, and the main thing I want to show you is that it takes every psukim, all the psukim literally, and if a pasuk says something, we have to follow the pasuk, even though it doesn't make sense, but if it says 430 years, I got to figure out the 430 years, even if it means moving chapter 15 before chapter 12 and making Avram 70, Brit Ben Abtarim, before Parshat Lech Lecha. Okay, let me check the chat now before we go on, and then I'll start our main topic. Rabbi's comment. The Torah does round off numbers. Okay. Seder Olam doesn't think so. No, it's a legitimate approach to say that the Torah is talking in round numbers. But Seder Olam doesn't hold from that.
The only problem is it's impossible to say the Torah doesn't round numbers, but we can discuss that later. Impossible. It's impossible that Moshe was 80 when he went to Paro and they spent 40 years in the desert and he died at 120. Something there has to give because
he deals with that.
Right. There was a time. Anyways, we can discuss later. And the Shvatim, I'm sorry, I made my comment to you privately so people, you didn't have to respond to it, but
Now, the 48 years is a result of the Chumash doesn't say 48 years. That's a calculation, 48 years. Okay. Now, the 430, in my opinion, the simple pshat is it's 430. You know, that's how long they're in Egypt for. That explains how we get to 600,000 people. But again, that's my whole point. Seder Olam won't accept that because if the psukim, if there aren't enough years in the life of Levi, Kat, and Amram, and Moshe, then I can't say there were generations in between. I have to say those were the years and those were the four generations and nothing you can do about that. Now, there's an English translation, Seder Olam. Go to Wikipedia. There's the English translation, but it's only very partial and not the greatest, but I have it online, but it's just a lousy translation, so I didn't use it. That's why I used the Hebrew instead. Okay, someone says, the English translation, and I guess there's somewhere. Look on the chat, and someone found out maybe a better one by Heinrich Guggenheimer. Okay, now we start today's class. What I want to show you is how Seder Olam did all the calculations we talked about last week. But I want to show you how he does them, okay? So now I'm going to share my screen, and we'll go back to... Basically, today we'll have to do a little class in the book of Daniel, but let's go back to our class in Seder Olam. There we go. Here's how he goes. In Perek Chavchet in Seder Olam, he's going to start with Dayavesh the Mede. Now, who's Darius the Mede? Here's where things get really confusing, and we have to deal with this. We'll go to Sefer Daniel in a minute. He starts as follows. He's going to quote a pasuk, we'll see in a minute, from the book of Daniel. We're going to return to this pasuk in a minute, but because of this pasuk, he's going to make one of his boldest statements about Persian history. And this is what I want to focus on. Listen to what he says. Shlosham malachim omdim laparas. There are only three Persian kings. During the Persian time period, there are only three Persian kings who existed during the biblical time period. Basically, three Persian kings. Who were they? Koresh was the first one. Achashverosh was the second one. That's the story of the Megillah. And this will take us to Megillat Esther. And Daryavesh was the third one. How about Artaxasta? Remember what we said last week? Daryavesh is Artaxasta. And after Artaxasta, who's Daryavesh, he's killed by Alexander the Great. And that's where we crunch all the years. So listen carefully. There are three kings of Persian kings during the Second Temple period. Koresh and Achashverosh before the temple was built. Daryavesh Shabanet et Abayit. Okay. Ayumatam, we'll see the fourth in a minute. That's the fourth one from Madai. Now, let me show you what he's talking about. And I see there's a lot of questions coming up here. Let me just check the chat real fast before I continue because I think someone's confused. Oh, the people have sound. Okay. Everyone has sound. We're good. Okay. I'm sorry. There was questions about the sound. Now, the What's the source of these three kings of Paras? Now, just a quick jump ahead to outside history. If you look in any encyclopedia or anything of Persian kings, according to outside history, who are the Persian kings? Here's a list of them. You have to summarize them, but there's Cyrus the Great from 550 to 529. There's Cambyses, Darius the First, Xerxes the First, Artaxerxes, Xerxes the Second, this guy, that guy, Darius the Second, Artaxerxes the Second, till Darius the Third. But from 550 about BCE to 330 BCE until Alexander the Great, there's like 10 some Persian kings, and they're listed everywhere. You can argue because the empire starts to crumble from Artaxerxes, and therefore there's a lot of overlap sometimes between kings. But this is the standard dating that's built on. Herodotus is the Greek historian who talks about the Persian time period, Persian documents, archaeology, astronomy. This is the accepted opinion among all historians. Now, you can argue here and there a couple years, but we're talking about how many years? Some 250 some years of Persian history. And in rabbinic literature, or based in Seder Olam, there's only three Persian kings, and they're all within about 52 years. So that difference is amazing. Like, that's not a difference you can just answer by a year or two here and there. So we have to see what led Seder Olam to reach this conclusion that we saw above here, that there's only three kings to Paras, Koresh, Achashverosh, and Dayavesh. Now, his main source has to be something in Tanakh. And the main source is going to be the book of Daniel. We're going to look at the book of Daniel in a minute. But one last word about the Persian Empire. Everyone knows the Babylonians destroyed the temple. The Babylonians, that's Babel, that's in the Persian Gulf. Everyone knows where Babylonia is, the area of Iraq today. Persia is where Iran is today. Before the Persians took over everything, there was an area called Elam, a little north, like between Turkey and Persia, an area called Elam. There's Madai. Actually, Madai was what's bigger than Paras. Madai's north of Persia. Persia was relatively small, but Koresh was this king of Paras who took over Madai and then took over Elam and basically then afterwards took over Babel. Now, Daniel, I'm sure you've heard of Daniel. Daniel was a young child when the Babylonians exiled Judea. Remember, he goes into exile, I think, with Joachim, the first wave of exile. He's a little child. He grows up. He becomes a big shot. He starts interpreting dreams. And remember, Daniel is not in Nevi'im, it's in Ketuvim. It means Daniel is not a Navi. Because God doesn't speak to him. He speaks to him through dreams. But there's never, he's not in Nevi'im. It's not Nevuah of things of, it's not the same level of Nevuah as like Yirmiyahu or Haggai or Malachi. And things in Daniel are very cryptic. The fact it's the first book in Tanakh where things are like really strange. Were prophecies, like amazingly strange prophecies. It has to do with being in exile as well. Let's take a look in Daniel. Let's open up the book of Daniel. And again, just look quickly at the first chapter to show the time period. It begins in the third year of King Jehoiakim. We see it's the third year after, that's the problem that year, but he's exiled with Nebuchadnezzar. So in the exile of Jehoiakim, or later becomes Galut Jehoiakim, Nebuchadnezzar exiles the first wave of exile from Jerusalem, and Daniel is a young child, and he's sort of conscripted by the Babylonians. He becomes he rises up into big positions in Persia. Now, in chapter 9, now Daniel, by the time Koresh comes into power, Daniel's already an old man. He's old, but he's in his probably 60s or 70, probably at least 70 when Koresh comes into power. It's maybe 60, 70, but he's not young anymore for sure. And the last nevuah of Daniel will be in year 3 of Koresh, we'll see. Now, but before then, he has a dream, I'm sorry, not nevuah, a dream. B'shnat achad l'dayevesh ben achashverosh mizera madai. Now, this is not achashverosh of the Megillah, nor is this Dayevesh of the book of Haggai and Zechariah. Rather, these are kings of Media, of Med, of Madai. Remember, later, Koresh takes over Pras Umadai. Koresh is king of Paras. This are the kings of Madai. Who are they? We don't have these names in outside history. We have the great Mede kings, as the Giza, we'll talk about them later on. But the scholars try to match up who Daniel is referring to. But these are the kings of Mede, of Madai, who are conquered later by Koresh himself. But again, before Koresh comes into power, he has this dream. So when he in the beginning of his dream, what happens? Peshat achat lemocho of Daryavash the Mede. Ani Daniel binoti basfarim mispar shanim asher yedvar Hashem yirmiyahu navi lemlot chovot yushlam 70 shana. We talked about this in the beginning of our series about why the people don't come back. When are the 70 years over? And Daniel is having this introspection and starts doing calculations. Oh my gosh, there's a new king in Madai. Maybe something's happening. Maybe Babel's going to fall. Maybe the 7 years are over. Maybe it's time for redemption. And therefore, what does he do? But Ned Panayel, he turns his face to God. He follows what Yirmiyahu said. You have to pray to God. But Palal Hashem, but Padan, he prays to God and asking God, El Hashem, I'll go to Hafan Larash, Merbifa Chesed. We've been terrible. We hadn't listened to your laws. The Hashem Estaka, Lanu Bosha Tapanim, all the things we say in davening. Basically, he davens earnestly for God to remember his promise and show God we're ready for redemption. And then, Batashma, Lin, Tfilat, Abdacha, Batuchnav, Ver, Panecha, Migdashcha, Shamem, Leman, Hashem. What we quote in davening on Mondays and Thursdays, we basically quote this whole section. And Hatay, Asachal, all this is on, we'll be saying it tomorrow morning. But basically, Daniel is praying that God will bring the people back now to Jerusalem and rebuild the temple. As part of God's answer, he gets an answer from the man called Gavriel here. And he says, Daniel, I'm going to give you some wisdom. And he says, you know, you started praying, and I'm coming to answer you. And here's his big answer in Pasach Avdalid. Shavu'ayim shivim nechtach alamcha v'al'ir kodshecha. There's 70 weeks, right, on your nation. And the interpretation of Chazal, what are these 70 weeks? These are 70 weeks are actually 70 Shemitah cycles. Every Shemitah cycle is 70 years. Rabbinic tradition says the temple was destroyed at the end of a Shemitah year. And therefore, there's 70 Shemitah cycles from the time the first temple was destroyed until the second temple will be destroyed, which is a total of 490 years. Because it's 70 years until it's built, it's the first 70. So I take away 70 from those, I take 10 groups of 70. That leaves me, you know, from the 490 now, I'm left with 420. Understand? These 70 weeks of seven, or 70 cycles of seven, is not understood as 70 weeks, but 70 Shemitot. That's the rabbinic interpretation. And that's going to be one of the reasons why the rabbis want to get to 420. Because it's 420 of the Second Temple period. We did that calculation last week. And 70 between the First Temple being destroyed and the Second Temple being built. That was a pasuk we saw in Zechariah. Again, there's nice round numbers, as we mentioned before. But that's the idea of Shvuyim Shivim. It gets more complicated afterwards. And we'll see. Daniel himself is told these things are very hard to understand. And no one will really totally understand them with codes until Mashiach comes. So again, that's chapter 9. That's chapter 9 in Daniel. Look what happens in chapter 10. In chapter 10 is the last nevuah that Daniel has, or last dream that he has. B'shnat shalosh l'koresh melech paras. Now we're already at a later date. Koresh is who? Is the, that's the Koresh of the Cyrus Declaration. There was a vision to Daniel. And he was an Avilut in Yerushalayim, and he has a vision, and we'll skip this vision for now. I'm showing the years of Daniel, and again, remember, it's the third year of Koresh. In Seder Olam, because this is the last mention of Koresh in Tanakh, Chazal assumed that Koresh was king for only 3 years. Now we go to the one we need for Seder Olam. Chapter 11 in Daniel. V'ani b'shnat achat le'dayev ha'shamadi. We're back to Daryavash the Mede, who's king right before Koresh. Daryavash the Mede is the last king of Madai, and Koresh defeats Daryavash Amadi a year or so after his reign. Okay, he says, on the first year of Darius the Mede, and that's exactly when he prayed back in chapter 9, Amdila Machzik Lamoslo, listen carefully and pretend that you are first year divination students, and you have to understand the meaning of this dream. This is what he says. Vata now, emet agilach. I'm going to tell you the truth. I'll make this nice and big. Okay. And now I'm going to tell you the truth. Hine od shlosha malachim amdim laparas. Three more kings are coming to the Persians. This is the first year of Darius the Mede, who's going to be defeated by Koresh, the Persian king. It says, after Darius the Mede, there are going to be three more kings of Paras. Three kings of Paras after Darius the Mede. And the fourth is going to become very wealthy, Haravi. The fourth king, we'll see what this fourth one is in a minute, will be very wealthy. Haravi Yasher Osher Gadol, from all of them, he'll be the greatest. Of all these Persian kings, the fourth will be the greatest. Uk cheskato, in the middle of his greatness, Boshro, in his wealth, Ya'ir akolet Machut Yavan. Then the kingdom of Greece is going to come and take over. So basically, there'll be three kings of Paras, four coming from Daryavash the Mede. The last of these Persian kings will be the greatest, will be great and greatest of all. But he'll be defeated by a king of Greece. The Admad Melech Gibor, this Greek king will be, you know, a great, strong, mighty king. Moshamim Sharav have a great role in dominion, and will do whatever he wants. Vasakir Sano. Uchamdo, when he stands up and becomes strong, Tishaber Machuto. This great Greek king is going to be really strong and great, but in the middle of his strength, his kingdom will be broken down, and it will be cut up into the four corners of the earth. Vetechatz Darba Ruchot Hashemayim. Lo Lachrito, not totally to the end. It won't be, it will never return to what it was before. It'll be divided up. But from the division of his great kingdom, the king of the south, of the southern area, will be the strongest of all his ministers. The southern king, you know, for the divided kingdom of this great, great king, will be divided up. He'll be the greatest one, will be the king of the south. Then he goes on where the king from the south will meet up with the king of the north and they'll make peace with each other. And he goes on. Now, let's stop here for a minute. Pretend you're a first year divination student. Who do you think the Greek king, who's the king? What does this sound like? Who's the great Greek king who's going to defeat the Persians?
Alexander
the Great. Everyone says Alexander the Great. Now, it doesn't say Alexander the Great, but that's everyone's assumption. If it's Alexander the Great, that's why these verses here in Daniel are the anchor for Seder Olam to reach this conclusion. Because what does he want to say? Remember what we did last week? We said that Daryavash is Artaxerxes, and everyone knew that Alexander the Great defeated a king named Darius, even though it was Darius the Third. But if Daryavash is Artaxerxes, then if the last king mentioned in Tanakh is Artaxerxes, and we claim he's Daryavash, then Alexander the Great defeated Daryavash, who's Artaxerxes. Got it? Now I want to show you all this in Seder Olam. But we just did. Look what Seder Olam does now. Seder Olam does it nice and simple. Here. He quotes the pasuk we just read in Daniel chapter 11. I'm in the first year of Darius the Mede. There'll be three more kings of Paras, and the fourth will be very big and strong. Okay. So first is Rabbi Yossi says, what are the Shuaim Shivim we talked about before in chapter 9? From the time Mishachar Bait HaRishon, from the time the first temple was destroyed, Atzarei Bait HaCharon, until the second temple was destroyed, Shivim L'Churbono, V'Arbamot V'Esrim L'Binino, 70 years of destruction. That's from the 11th year of Tzidkiyahu to the second year of Daryavash, and 420 years of the second temple period. Okay. Now he's going to talk about who are these three Persian kings. Who are the three Persian kings? Remember what he said was? Who are the three kings? Koresh, Achashverosh, and Daryavash. Now, this section in chapter 29 in Perek Chavtet, we'll deal with this when we get to Miguel at the Sal, just give the background. He claims of these three Persian kings, we have to fit these three Persian kings into these 70 years, but 52 years already was, we'll see, there's 52 years from the time the temple was destroyed until the first year of Koresh. That has to do with Yirmiyahu's 70 years. We'll deal with that again when we get to Megillat Esther. But he says, in the third year of Koresh, remember, that was chapter 10, what conclusion does he reach? Because Koresh is mentioned for the last time in the third year of his reign, Seder Olam reaches what conclusion? Koresh Malach Gimel Shanim. Koresh was king for only 3 years. It doesn't say that in Tanakh. We know that he was king for at least 3 years. Seder Olam reaches what conclusion? He was king for only 3 years. Achashverosh takes over, and Achashverosh is king for, we'll see, 14 years. When we do Megillat Esther, we'll do this calculation. That's four. Now, let's look at the next one. Okay. The rest is everything we have in all the events of Megillat Esther. That's four and five. Okay. And then, here we go. We have to get now to what we talked about last week. It's a six. Okay. What happened in the second year of Dayavesh? Okay. He says, in the second year of Dayavesh is when the temple was built. Again, we'll see, he holds that this is after the story of Purim. We'll disagree with that, but that's the Shita of Seder Olam. Okay. V'chein Tzchai Omer, we read this last week, on the 24th day of the 11th month, in the second year of Dayavesh, Tzchai had his nevuah, and God told him in that dream, or in that vision, Ad matai lo terachem et arei Yehuda v'et Yerushalayim asher zamta zeh 70 shana. And there we know that it's 70 years from the destruction of the temple until the second year of Dayavesh. So that's what we talked about in last week's share. I'm just showing you Seder Olam quotes the exact same psukim. Then we saw in the book of Ezra that they finished in the sixth year. Therefore, kol arba shanim haya bait nivneh, shenamar, what we saw in the book of Ezra that's finished in the sixth year of Dayavesh. Now comes his big, bold statement. We spent a whole share on the gap between year six of Dayavesh to year seven of Artaxasta, which was from your chapter 6 of the book of Ezra to chapter 7 in the book of Ezra. And what does he say? After the temple is built in year 6 of Dayavesh, ubato hazman l'shana haba ala Ezra mibavel v'galut acheret imo. What conclusion does Seder Olam reach? The same thing we saw in our class last week. The next year, in other words, there is no gap between chapter 6 and 7 in the book of Ezra. And at the same time, the next year, Ezra comes from Bavel together with another wave of exile. And he quotes the pasuk from Ezra chapter 7, Achar Dvar Me'ela, during the reign of Artaxasta. We get the genealogies of Ezra, and he comes to Jerusalem in year 7 of Artaxasta. Okay. And then from there, he jumps to Nehemiah in year 20. But just a review of what we did last week. Last week, we went through all that whole calculation. That was in the week beforehand. We talked about the gaps of the years in between the remember that it was based on all the gaps we talked about between chapter 6 and 7 in Ezra. Now, let's go back to what we're doing today. You were doing back to Seder Olam. There we go. Then we have Nehemiah begins. The first book of Nehemiah begins in year 20 of Artaxasta. And then he returns in year 32. We said that in chapter 13. He was in Jerusalem until 32nd year of Artaxasta, and he comes back 2 years later, and that was the 34 years of Beit Sheni. Okay. So we have year 20, year 32. He's in Yerushalayim, and he says as follows now: Beinat tamutze leparas malachim ela shalosh. Therefore, we only have three kings of Paras, Koresh, Dayavesh, and Achashverosh. Elohu Koresh, Hu Dayavesh, or Taxasta. This statement, the rabbis mentioned a lot, I want to make sure it's understood. When the rabbis say Hu Koresh, Hu Dayavesh, or Taxasta, they're not saying that Koresh is Dayavesh, or Taxasta. They're saying that Artaxasta, the Fishakola Melachim, Nikret Artaxasta. That any Persian king can also be named Artaxasta. And therefore, if I find a king named Koresh, he might also be called Artaxasta. A king named Dayavesh might also be called Artaxasta. That's Artakshasta, he says, is the general name, and each one can have that. But he's not saying that our Koresh is also Artakshasta. He's saying Koresh is Koresh, Achashverosh, Achashverosh, and our Dayavesh, he's Artakshasta. And therefore, if you told up all the years then, if I take, because there's 18 years from Koresh to the second year of Dayavesh, and there's another 34 years from the second year of Dayavesh until the 34th year of Artakshasta, because it's the same king. Therefore, I take 18 and 34 and I get to 52. Therefore, Koshne Machem Adayo Pras Nun Bet Shana, 52 years. Now listen to what he says. Here's what we did in Daniel. He quotes the pasuk from Daniel. V'yaman melech gibor moshamim shabra v'asak yirtzono. A great king comes up. Total dominion. That's what he wants. That's going to be Darius the Great. Alexander the Great, I'm sorry. And his kingdom will break up into parts, okay, to the four corners of the earth, but not to its conclusion. And finally, the king of the south will be taking over. So that's Alexander Mokdon, who's king for 12 years. And then, who's Melech Negev? They say that's going to be Tamai, because when they divide the kingdom between Selefkos and Tamai and Demetrius, the king of the south will be Tamai, and Midri makes peace with Melech Tzafon, who they say is going to be Selefkos. So basically, they see in the vision of Daniel the rise of Greece and the fall of Persia. Now, because that's the end of Tanakh, Ad kana yu anavim mitnabim b'ruach hakodesh, mikan ve'elech chatas necha u'shma divrei chachamim. That's the end of Tanakh. From then on, you count on to the years of the, you follow by the chachamim. Therefore, Rabbi Yossi, that's Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalaf of Seder Olam, says, Melchut Paras in front of us was 34 years. The Greeks were around for 180, Chashmonai 103, the Romans for 103, and total them up, 34, 180, 103, and 103, you get the total 420. And that's the 420 of Bayit Sheni. Okay? And then he says as follows, Mikan ve'elech, Sevech Shov L'Churban HaBayit. Okay? From then on, just simply, you know, basically, that's the 420 Bayit Sheni. From then on, simply count the years since the temple was destroyed. And then he says, what do we do from a practical point of view? Uvagola, what do we do? And this proves what we talked about last week. In the exile, what's our custom? Hayu kotvin b'shtarot, the minyan yevanim, alfa. What do? When we write on a shtar, we take the Greek year. Remember, the Greek year began in minus 312. And the Greek year, according to Seder Olam, begins with Alexander the Great, 6 years into Alexander the Great's conquest. And what do? We add alpha to the Greek year, which means what do? That's how we counted to the Exodus. Remember, we did the Cheshbon last week that with this, by crunching all these years, it turns out that the Exodus happened 1,000 years beforehand. Okay? Vagra Piresh, okay, this is the on the Gras Pirush, either, from Mitzet Mitzrayim is Elef Shanim. What are the 1,000 years from the Exodus? This is everything we did last week. 480, the Pasuk in Malachim, remember? 410 of Bayit Rishon, 52 of Malchei Paras, and then 52 of Malchei Paras, and that's how we get to the 420. And then that gets us to, 994, and then we add 6 years of Malchut Yavan, that's we get to 1,000 years. And that was our calculation we did last week. Remember? What did we do last week? That was the 480, 410, and then the 70, the 33, and the year he takes over, and the 6, and that was we had the 6, and that was the 420. So I'm just trying to show you everything we did last week is exactly from Seder Olam. And again, in our conclusion, our conclusion was that we were counting from the Exodus. And then when they want to change the count to creation, we go back to Seder Olam, where Avram was born in 1948, and Yitzchak was 400 years later, and we took the minimum Exodus 400 years later from the birth of Yitzchak, 2448, and that's how we got to our year today. The Greek year is 2333, plus 1,000 Tzitzit Mitzrayim is 3333, 2448, and that's our year 5781. And just to summarize, What were the conclusions based on? It's based on taking all the years literally in Sefer Bereshit, that Yitzhak Mitzrayim happened 400 years from the birth of Yitzhak, which again is not the simple meaning of Tanakh, but it's understandable, Seder Olam, with the years don't come to confusion, but they come to give you the answer and always take the minimum. That was based on Brit Ben Haftarim. And then there's no gap between chapter 6 and 7 in Ezra, which again for sure is a pshat. And then the year when Tanakh ends, Alexander the Great comes next year and takes over Elam. And 6 years later, he takes over the rest of the Persian Empire. And there's only three Persian kings. So that was a taste of Seder Olam. I'm going to show you one other thing in a longer Seder Olam. Let me stop this year. Let's look at Seder Olam. That was the end of the, that's the table we did last week. There's another Seder Olam of this one. Here we go. That's the one we did before. Let me move all the way down to the bottom. There's one other thing Seder Olam says about how we go from, what was the big line we had? That's not that one. We'll find it here in a second. Here we go, here. We said this Rabbi Yossi and we count to the name. Okay. Then he says like, then he has the eight Greek kings that takes all the way to Herod and Churban HaBayit in Seder Olam. There's a little addition to Seder Olam. Then he talks about Bechemet Bar Kuziva, that's the Bar Kokhba revolt. He talks about them. And then he talks about all these psukim from Daniel. And then we'll see there'll be these calculations going to, here we go at the end, but so I want to show you. When I said Sikhla and Tanya de Seder Olam Rabbah, that's the end of the Braita of Seder Olam Rabbah. And there's another version where there's an addition from even after the Persian time period, they add the years of the Second Temple period all the way to after the Bar Kokhba revolt, or basically to the time of Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalavta in Beit Sheni. But again, the original work is primarily to the end of Tanakh, and then there's going to be, what I just showed you, all this section that I'm just going through here, is a later addition to Seder Olam that takes you up to the time period of Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalavta. That pretty much is based on Greek history. So let me take questions real fast. Let's see what we had in the chat. Okay. The Hebrew Seder Olam, again, it's the quote, it's from, there's a place called Wikitext that has all the texts for, just basically go to Wikipedia and do Seder Olam, or just do a Google search for Seder Olam, Rabbah, and it'll give you the text. Also, who else has it? Dot has it also. There's a lot of websites that have Seder Olam. There's different Dear Soap, but those are the main, they're pretty much all identical. Now, let's go back to the main question of insight. Okay. I want to go back to what we were talking about last week. And what's the main reason we did this? The main reason we're doing this is because we're going to focus starting next week on what happens during Megillat Esther. Now, once we say there's only three kings to Persia, and we crunch all the years, we're forced to put Achashverosh between Koresh and Daryavesh. Got it? Which doesn't fit the outside history. But once I say that Achashverosh and the story of Megillat Esther has to be between Koresh and Daryavesh, hence it's before the temple was built, that's going to cause us to read Megillat Esther in a very special way. And there'll be tons of midrashim because of that, that are read into Megillat Esther. For example, why is there a party in the third year of Achashverosh's reign? So we'll see what that has to do with Yirmiyahu's Nevuah. Why does Ezra make Aliyah the year, why is Daryavesh allow the Jews to rebuild the temple? Well, Daryavesh is going to be the son of Esther. Because if Achashverosh is before Daryavesh, so Daryavesh must be the son of Achashverosh, and hence the son of Esther, and that explains why he allows the Jews to rebuild the temple. There'll be a lot of rabbinic conclusions, midrashic conclusions, based on the fact there's only three Persian kings. The second you accept outside history and put Ahasuerus where he fits historically, all those fall apart. Now, what is it trying to claim? Why is it that in our Jewish tradition, that was a question I saw in the chat, why is our Jewish tradition so zeroed in on Seder Olam and we take literally all the midrashim of these crunched years? What I want to suggest is, once we began this custom of counting to creation, which became our Jewish custom over the last 1,000 years, from the early time of the Rishonim already, everyone is counting to creation. And since the count to creation is built on the crunched years of Seder Olam, the Beit Shem was only 420 years, and is built on there is no gap between Koresh and Dayavish, and Achashverosh is earlier, because that's the date we put on all of our documents, then that date has to be treated historically. It would be too complicated to say that that's not a true date. And once I accept the date of Briat Olam as true history, and it makes sense that's how they accepted it, then all the midrashim that the rabbis use to get to that date, instead of becoming midrashim, they become Jewish history. And that's why every art scroll history book that talks about this time period, you know, they'll teach you, these are the Persian kings. And this is the story of Megillat Esther. What happened was that because of the fact that we began this custom of dating to creation, which is built on these midrashim of Seder Olam, that instead of becoming midrashic interpretations, they became actual history. Now, why is that important to know? Because now that we're, I guess, we would say more educated, we have more tools at our fingertips. And there's more open, we have all these sources that we can go to, and we have all these archaeological sources and historical sources. What do you do? Let's go back to what we talked about last week. What do you do when you encounter these outside sources and you see the midrashic interpretations are non-historical at all? So what do you say? The rabbis made a mistake, and then once the rabbis make a mistake in history, maybe they mistake in halacha, and then we have this slippery slope. And that's why no one teaches this. And that's why it's so confusing. But for those who end up learning this and studying this, I want to explain why there's this contradiction between outside history and rabbinic history. There's a very logical reason for how it came about. And you have to take into consideration that not every generation had all the resources that we have. And not every generation had the sophistication to explain how complicated everything was and how Midrashim worked. And because that information wasn't available to most people, everyone simply accepted the history of Seder Olam is real history. But now that we know we have all these other sources, we can understand how Seder Olam came about. Now, I tried to show you that the conclusions of Seder Olam are far from unanimous. Like, there's lots of opinions. For example, Ebenezer says that Avram made Aliyah the 430s, going from when Avram left Ur Kasdim. Not that he came to Israel and went back. He left Ur Kasdim, and it's 430 from when he left Ur Kasdim. Not from Brit Ben Abtarim. It gives us to be, and then Chumash can be back in order. Some people could say 430 is from, also could be from the birth of Yitzhak, and things were delayed 30 years. So thing, there's a lot of different opinions. Not everyone accepts every conclusion of Seder Olam, and therefore there's room to argue with Seder Olam. It's just it became mainstream Jewish history and everyone accepted it. Okay, now let's take a look quickly at the chat. What else was there? Good history book. The truth is, I've never seen a good history book that explains this nicely. Either they give you every history book usually gives you like Das Sofrim, gives you the years, and he rips apart this whole approach of, you know, the academic approach in Das Sofrim. I'm pretty sure if I remember reading it, he accepts the Chazal approach and tries to, in Dat Mikra, In the book of Ezra Nehemiah, they talk about the missing years and they follow the historical approach. But is there a book that goes through all the years? Not one that I'm familiar with that does it nicely. I'm sure there must be, though. You have to check Rabbi. Doesn't Rabbi, what's the rabbi from Yerushalayim? Rabbi Ben Ilal has his history books. I'm not sure if he has that time period in his book. He has the history of the Tanaim. I'm not sure.
I
Not sure
don't
if he has
think
Bible.
in volume one, he might allude to it a little bit. I have to look more closely. I don't think he discusses it at length. It's just sort of, when he puts the years like for Anshe Knesset HaGdola and this and that, but.
Listen, I tell you, the big Rabbi Elazar ben Adomim. He's the earliest Rishon who brings this up and follows what we did, and disagrees with Seder Olam and explains why. But they put him in Cherem. Not because it was not because he was wrong, but because he's dangerous. Yeah, that's maybe I'll bring that next time. It's really cute what happened with Rabbi Elazar ben Adomim,
Not
and
much
what they
has
wrote
changed.
about him. Yeah, not bad. But I'm saying you can understand why it became accepted because the Gemara quotes Seder Olam, and our calculations are based on Seder Olam, and those are the years. Remember when you do Birchas Hachama, and you do like how many years when one remember creation was 3760 BCE. If you remember when they did Birchas Hachama a couple years ago, all the calculations of Birchas Hachama are built on this, and it's ridiculous because there's no. That doesn't hold water astronomically or historically, and that it's not even a shot of the Gemara what it means when you see the sun, the moon, and the tkufa. The tkufa really means the solstice when they would mark the dates, but that's something else. Yeah, Mishnah first has Drusus and conflict, but he doesn't use he just brings everyone with the different opinions and shows you half the people this way, half the people that way. But he doesn't do what I did. Let me just check the other things. The opinions of the whole Seder Olam to be accurate is understandable. They had no other sources in front of them. Okay. Whether rabbis can make errors, the rabbis accept to make errors. That's for sure. You can have if rabbis didn't make errors, there wouldn't be all these arguments. There's you can reach a conclusion, but again, it's not psak halacha that changes. It's just how they viewed history. Now again, you don't. It's too complicated to teach people, so they just keep it simple. That's all. David Glatt. Okay, there's a book by David Glatt. They say it's good. And Seder Olam in Hebrew. Yeah, it's online. Just do a search online for Seder Olam Rabbah. There's also Seder Olam Zuta. There's Sefer Megillat Antiochus. It talks about Second Temple history as well.
Rabbi, just to
Okay, so
pick up on
today was the
what.
last complicated share. Next week we'll get more. Today was very complicated. Just wanted to give you a taste of Seder Olam to show you how complicated it was. Next week we're going to start Megillat Esther properly, and what we need to do is we have to go back to the books of Ezra and Nehemiah and study them. That was the main thing I wanted to do, and to understand Megillat Esther and when it fits, I have to read the rest of the book of Ezra when Ezra makes Aliyah and see what he finds. I'd see what Nehemiah does. And see, does it really make sense when I look at Ezra and Nehemiah, both books together, where does it make most sense to put Megillat Esther? The story sheet simply Megillat is the same story we had last week. And Megillat, didn't I send you Seder Olam?
No, you didn't send me that
Oh,
source
I'm
sheet.
sorry. I sent it to Alan. I'm sorry. I sent it to Alan. I forgot to send it to you. I
So
was
send it to me and then we'll put it on the
that
website.
was
I
one
know.
of those. Okay.
Okay, I get all the blame, it's fine.
No, it's my fault
No,
today.
it's
I made a
okay.
mess up today at
No
home.
problem. We'll put it up. We'll put it
We
up
had a
next.
car problem today and I didn't get everything out in
But
time.
just really to pick up on what we discussed last week, again, this is a big educational issue, especially in the modern Orthodox world. That's what we're talking about. How do we sort of teach the Chazal approach, the Midrashic approach, which may not be historically true. And I think for much of our world, that's hard for people to accept that. And it really does. Even if you don't want to, people sort of say, well, Chazal got it wrong. And
No, but what I want to show you is what when Chazal make a statement that is so obviously historically wrong, they didn't think it would, they never
of
thought it would
course.
be taken seriously. And when you read, what my point is, that's what I have to do next week. When I read the rest of the book of Ezra, it's going to be so obvious that Artaxasta and Dayavas can't be the same king. Anyone just reads the simple Hebrew, there's absolutely no way that Dayavas could be the same king as Artaxasta. And when Chazal say that in the Midrash, that was my point. They're only doing it to turn the Jewish year, the Greek year, into a Jewish year. And they had no intention of it being real history. They just did a little, like a little acrobatic exercise to make it work out. But I don't think when they said it, one of my proofs, one of my proofs is going to be, is that Rabbi Yosef Bar Chalef of Seder Olam is a generation after Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is right after Josephus. Now, Josephus, when you read Josephus, maybe I'll bring it next time. Josephus has all the Persian kings, like outside history. Where he puts Megillat Esther, we'll talk about. He puts it much later, but definitely not the way Chazal put it. In other words, Josephus, who is a from Jew, maybe he was a bit left wing once he became a traitor, but I think he was a Kohen, if I'm not mistaken. He knows what's going on in Jerusalem. He's the expert on it. And if he's aware of all the Greek kings, and he writes about them, and he quotes them all, he's aware of all of them, and he doesn't follow Seder Olam at all, that means that the Tanaim are aware of the outside history. And if Seder Olam is quoting, you know, materials from Tanaim, and, you know, it's, Rabbi Akiva is aware of Josephus, or not maybe the person, but that's the same time period, it doesn't make sense if Josephus knows something that the Tanaim don't know. Saying in the time of the Tanaim at the end of the Qurban are aware of outside history. That's for sure. And therefore, when they make that statement that Dariavish is Artaxasta, I don't think they're making it. That's not how they understood history. They were just doing that from the Greek history to Jewish. And I think there's ample reason to do that without having to. It's not they made a mistake in history. It was more important for them for the Greek year to be a Jewish year with the Alpha.
I mean, I agree with you, but I don't think that's a common belief system among most from Jews. They don't, it's not taught that way, that the Midrashim, that the rabbis didn't really mean it. I teach it that way, but I, you yeah. know,
what Norman put out, this is also what Norman mentioned. When you look at biblical dates, they put the temple destroyed in 432 BC, but everyone knows it's 586. That's 160 years that are missing. Yeah.
Let me ask you, if I may, does somebody else have a question? I don't want to, you know, somebody wants to jump in. Otherwise, I guess maybe I'll just raise the issue. In other words, why does the Chumash do this? In other words, the idea of 430 years and four generations, it clearly doesn't drive together well. You either have to
400, I learned that we say typological, right? Not typological. I was corrected last week. Okay. They have to be typological numbers. Listen, I'll show you something. 40, always good. This is a rule of thumb. The number 7 always goes with Shem Elokim. The number 40 always goes with Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei. The flood, B'Shem Elokim, B'Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei is 40 days and 40 nights. Creation, everything with nature is always 7. So the dreams about a famine, remember there'll be 7 years of famine, 7 years of good. It'll always be 7. 40 years in the desert, anything historical or Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei, that's why Yitzhak Mitzrayim is 400 years. I need to get the 40 in there, don't I? So it's 10 times 40. The Beit HaMikdash, 480, that's 12 times 40. That's what I'm saying. It's too rounded off to be true. All in Sefer Shoftim, 40 years, and four times 40 years, and one time 80 years. Those are typological numbers. They weren't written to be taken literally. But Seder Olam does take him literally. I just think the goal of Seder Olam, that's why I want to repeat my main conclusion from last week. If you're living in the Second Temple period under Greek rule and everyone's using the Greek year, and you'd rather have a Jewish year, it's worth a little Midrashic acrobatics to turn the Greek year into a Jewish year. It's such a great idea. And it caught on, it became viral. Everyone accepted it. And it's so nice that the Greek year becomes a Jewish year. Remember, by adding Alpha, and we see they added Alpha to the Greek here. And therefore, because that became the dating system already in the Second Temple period, once Chazal used Minyan Shtarot, and that was a minute to use Minyan Shtarot, to turn Minyan Shtarot to a Jewish year, you need to crunch the years. In my opinion, that's reason enough. And once everyone's doing it, then they take the Midrashim to reach that conclusion in Israel history. And that's fine for them. Why do anything else? There's no need to. Now, what I was trying to show you is the fact that the book of Ezra skips the years, that allows Chazal to crunch the years. You know, the fact that prophecy pretends like they don't exist, so that enables Chazal to say they don't exist. Not that they didn't exist, but it's a reason to ignore them historically. You know, it could be different pieces of history.
You got one more question, really, in chat, if you want to take a look at that, then we'll call it a morning. An afternoon or evening.
Okay, wait, so what happened since you discussed Daniel?
Mel's question on Daniel.
Oh, yeah. Why did they write, listen, Daniel is probably from different, That's complicated, but the fact that Daniel talks about the king of Greece, Melech Yavan, taking over, that's why they put it into the Greek time period. That's why they consider it later. Also, the what's the word? Not epistem. What's the word when you have it's a fancy word in English.
Eschatological.
That kind of stuff. That's already Second Temple. That's already Second Temple literature kind of stuff. So it fits more into that. I'm always bothered how Daniel made it into Tanakh, because it doesn't fit. It's not like the rest of the books. The stuff is really strange. Now, behind all this, and that's the topic for Marty Lakshin, is that there's a lot of Christianity polemics behind this, which I think is probably the real reason, because they take Daniel's Nevuot. They see Daniel's Nevuot as Daniel's predictions or dreams are going to lead to their Messiah. So it's important for us to take Daniel's things and put them to Jewish history, not Christian history. I think that might be another reason behind everything, but that's a topic for, that's his big topic, right?
Okay, and we also have, Malka Simkowitz is going to start in a couple of weeks on the Second Temple period. So the Apocrypha, she's going to talk about the books that Taka didn't make it into in Tanakh. So, okay, Torah all works together. All right, just to more, thank you very much. Yes, okay, like Rabbi Liebtag said, next week will be a little bit less confusing. So, but it's good to be, not confusing, it's good to... Like something we got to work our way through the.
The main thing I want to show you today is that how Seder Olam works. It's how it crunches years, and that everything we did last week and the week before is all in Seder Olam. That's all. I'm just trying to explain to you what I try to do. Instead of reading Seder Olam as a history book, I try to trace you the thought process that led the Tanaim of Seder Olam to reach the conclusions. So that's what I did. I took a logical approach of let's turn that into a year, wouldn't it be nice? And use the psukim to reach that conclusion. And I showed you what I did based on logic is exactly what Seder Olam does. Now, I wasn't explaining Seder Olam, I was explaining common sense. And then today I showed you that process of common sense or logical approach to get to that conclusion is exactly what Seder Olam did. But when you read Seder Olam without the background, you don't know what he's talking about. So I was trying to show you. Now take Seder Olam and read it step by step, and you'll see his thought process. That's all.
Yeah,
that's the main
you.
Thing I try to accomplish this week.
All right, very good. Yashar Koach. It's